Good afternoon, members and individuals from the public. I officially call the Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform Policy and Finance Committee of the 91st Legislative Session to order. And I have to say that it's been 4 years since I've held one of these, and so I want to make sure I'm holding it correctly. This is the way you do it, right? Not like this? Is that? Yeah. And I chaired committees in this room many years ago as well, and I have to admit this would be the last choice of room for me if I had a choice. It's a nice big room. In the wintertime, unless they fixed it, it used to be a very cold room. And of course, we have the primo chairs in the entire building here, right?
Yeah.
To pick from. So, Representative Johnson, I think you probably got the winner chair there. I've sat low in that chair for many, many years. So.
Chair Mariani, if I could just add.
Representative Dean.
Although we have one of the most unusual rooms, we're never on camera. We're only audio. So if you don't want to wear a tie, this would be the committee not to wear.
I can't remember the last time I wore a tie, so thank you. So. Members, it's really a privilege to be chairing this committee, and I'm really encouraged by the makeup of our committee structure. I'm really looking forward to some very good work here in the course of the coming months, and I hope that we'll be doing work where we're reaching across the aisle, bringing our best thoughts into collective action. I also know that, like many other areas, that public safety and criminal justice reform is an area that enjoys strong ideas and support across the ideological spectrum of our country. And in many ways, we're kind of at a historical point, I think, right now, where there's some real opportunities for us to do some really smart, strong, good redesign and rethinking. That furthers and expands the concept of public safety. Having said that, I'm not arguing that those conversations have not been had in this committee before or in this legislature. It's really about calling us to be our best to continue moving in the direction that I think our society really wants us to move in, which is how do we continue to contribute to healthy, safe communities. And how do we do that in a way that really enhances the human dignity of all individuals in our state and in our country? So today, what I want to do is spend the early part of our meeting sharing with one another general thoughts about that. Obviously, this is the intro, to one another. And I would ask you, as we do that, to share part of your identity and your experience relative to this issue, this broad issue of public safety and criminal justice reform. Some of you, for instance, may have a law enforcement background. Some of you may have a teaching background. Think a little bit about how that particular experience has prepared you to be on this committee, and why it's important for someone with that kind of background, with that kind of experience, should be on this committee. Let me just say a few other thoughts very quickly, and I've already touched on this, in terms of broad movements and trends that are happening across our society. I've been here for a while. I first came here in the 91 session, so if you add it up, it's 28 years, man. And I certainly had no intention of being here that long. Quite honestly, it doesn't feel that long to me. And I think part of that is because I've always been blessed and privileged to be involved in good, dynamic thinking about how do we produce laws that consistently align and realign with how our society is growing. I've also seen cycles, in particular in this area, that are that reflect different directions in which we've gone over the course of the past couple of decades. You all know, I suspect, you know, the big federal 94 crime bill, which was a major signal and driver of lengthier mandatory minimums, particularly tied to drug-related offenses and convictions. States followed pretty closely that big federal move. I was actually on this, or precursor of this committee at that time, in the mid to late 90s. And I have to say, quite honestly, this is me, you know, that I was dismayed with some of the decisions that we made at that time to really echo this lengthening. And in my words, these are subjective, I get it, so I'm owning it, harshness. Of approach to particularly to our drug laws. And what we do know, what is factual, that in a short period of time, the incarceration rates of Americans went up 700%, 700% in the decades that followed since then. I don't have to lecture anyone here, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, conservative or liberal, that has had a marked impact on the nature of our society, how we relate to one another, including putting tremendous stresses on our public safety system, putting tremendous stresses on our correction system, putting tremendous stresses on our social intervention systems, putting tremendous stresses on our schools. I visited a middle school a few years back with my congresswoman within a few blocks of my home on the west side in St. Paul. And after spending a half a day, sat with the principal and you know, just evaluated and assessed what we saw. And it's a school that is heavily challenged by being a heavily 80 to 90% low-income kids eligible for free and reduced lunch. Easily a quarter to a third of the student population where English is a language that they're learning as they come into the schools. A number of those sort of, you know, classic social issues. And at one point, the principal says, well, let me share something with you that I suspect you two aren't thinking about. And she said, we don't have the firm numbers here, but I could tell you pretty safely that at least a quarter of our students come from a household where there is an adult that's involved in the correction system, either a parent who's currently in prison or another parent who has been through the system. And those young children bring the fallout of that to this environment. And it is one of the things we have to pay attention to, and we have to incorporate as being good educators and professionals in making opportunity possible for them. Is that a condemnation of the mass incarceration, you know, issue? I leave that for each of you to decide. The real issue, though, the indisputable issue is that that's a reality. That the reality of having that home life has a direct impact on the ability of these young people to be effective in our public schools. And so I think the wonderful opportunity we have before us is to engage with one another in diving deep into the incredibly complex and multi, headed nature of our entire public safety system to see where we can make a difference that can produce a healthier reality for these young children, for our communities. There has been movement, as I said earlier. In 2010, The Fair Sentencing Act was passed in Congress that began to take some steps toward equity. Many of you remember the powder versus crack cocaine issue and the inequities that had de facto been built into that and produced inequitable outcomes for different communities, racial, cultural, and economic communities across the country. The point is that Congress, whether it's perfect or not, the point is that there's this deliberative process through our legislative process to challenge ourselves, to think through, and then to take steps to move in a different direction. Of course, you all know that last month the First Step Act was passed through. I think that's what it's called, right? The U.S. Senate First Step. They didn't change it when they passed it. That in a bipartisan nature was passed, and President Trump signed that piece of legislation. There's plenty, I think, to point to there, particularly in terms of the reentry focus of that act, and plenty that still needs to be addressed, particularly the front-end issues that are not addressed by that act. But I think, just like in 1994, we should certainly take a signal from our federal brethren to be part of a big national movement to consistently do what we do as legislators, which is to constantly reflect, adjust, and adapt laws that mirror what we're reflecting, what we're learning, and that mirror the will of the people, and that mirror, hopefully, the will of the people in terms of wanting to be a healthy community, state community, in this case, a federal community in Congress. So I hope that we'll continue to push through our deliberations and in interacting with the different elements within our broad public safety environment in Minnesota to ask critical questions of our good professionals in all those areas. We'll have an opportunity to do that a little bit later when we hear for the Pulse Board. The agenda to my colleagues here can be as big as we want it to be. Obviously, it involves policing elements, sentencing elements, corrections elements, reentry elements, and quite frankly, even us speaking on the social opportunities that we often don't think about when we think about public safety. You know, what is the role of education, for instance, within corrections? What is the role of education, as I mentioned earlier, up front with young people, because we know that the studies show that good educational outcomes very much align with not being part of the correction system, not being caught up for atoning for bad practices and bad actions. So there's much before us. I'm really, really looking forward to working with you. All of you know that I've spent most of my years focused heavily on education issues, and so I'm going to own it right up front. I'm on a steep learning curve with you, and I look forward to learning as much from you as sharing my bit of knowledge with you. Chair Johnson, I look forward to getting your advice and your counsel as someone who has sat in this seat and has wrestled with some of these issues. And I know a number of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle in recent years have been pushing some really good, strong legislation. I look forward to entertaining those conversations as well. We have new members here who have come to this legislature in part by talking about this issue and receiving encouragement from their constituents to move forward in terms of reform and redesign. I look forward to those exciting ideas that you have. And the energy that you bring to it. So with that, I'm going to stop talking and do a little sipping of water. And what I'd like to do is just go around the table and have you introduce yourselves to one another and to do a little reflecting, if you will, out loud about what is it about your interests and your background, your experience that you bring to this table here for this legislative session. And Chair Johnson, I'm going to start with you.
Chair Mariani, first of all, I want to thank you for the very good conversation we had the other day about this committee. And I'm looking forward to working with you on important issues that will be before it. This committee has always done the work that is in the best interest of the public safety of Minnesota, and moving bills forward and legislation for that in a bipartisan way. And we want to keep doing that, keeping the public safety as a top priority. However, I am disappointed that we've been delegated to the basement, the lowest level of the state office building. But what concerns me more and the most about being down here is the fact that this committee is no longer televised. What happens to this committee, I feel, affects the safety and the well-being of every citizen of this state. And over the years, it's probably been the most widely watched committee in this legislature, of the House of Representatives. And judging from my inbox of my email account, there are a number of issues that are important to the people in my district and across the state that will be coming before this committee, and that there will be a lack of transparency as they no longer will be able to watch and observe the important actions of this committee. That deeply concerns me. Normally when our committee is going, even if you don't have any controversial issues, this committee has always been pretty much a full house. And there's a lot less seating in here than we normally have in room 10 or 200. And I know you have a lot of things that you want to work on, especially on the criminal justice reform. But in Minnesota, we've always been the leader in that. Years ago, we set up the Sentencing Guidelines Committee, and we've took care of a lot of the issues. Is there still some disparity that we need to deal with? Absolutely. But we've always been ranked in the top 2 to 3 of the lowest incarceration rate in the country. We dealt with this issue years ago, and the issues that I'm hearing on the news and in the press are not happening in Minnesota. They're happening across the country in other states. And those states are now looking at what we've done years ago and starting to look at those issues. A couple years ago, we did drug sentencing reform, and those issues have been addressed. Comes back from a lawsuit dealing with some of it from that lawsuit dealing with the difference between cocaine and crack. And so we've dealt with a lot of those issues in the reform. We still need the people that violate the laws. They need to be held accountable in a responsible way, and they need to take personal responsibility. I feel terribly sorry for these children who suffer because their parents made unwise choices. And how do we help those children, still holding those people accountable for the choices they made? That's the difficult situation that we have to deal with. So with that, I'll let us continue. I miss having the gavel. But I do hope that we can work together and bring strong bipartisan bill together at the end of this year, funding the important issues that we need to deal with. The Department of Corrections, we have some major issues we have to deal with in there, and I know Representative Considine is the chair of the subcommittee on that. I do want to get an opportunity when I have to sit down with him and talk about some of the ideas I have and work with him in a way that we can get some, keep our corrections officers safe and actually get our staff up to full staff again. We're having a tough time hiring new staff. We are not getting people even applying for the positions that we have open. So we got to really, really sit down and figure out a way to get those positions open and keeping our staff safe. So looking forward to this year working with everybody.
Likewise. Chair Johnson, thank you so much for your words. And you know, let's make a bet with each other and reapproach our leadership here on this issue of visual transparency, if you will, of visual awareness for the public. I actually had the same kind of issues years ago when I chaired the Education Committee that we weren't being televised. One of the ways we dealt with that is that we did find several opportunities to bring our hearing into other rooms where that was possible. So we, I think, can at least make that strong play, but let's join together our voices and make sure that our leadership aligns with our values and making sure the public is visually aware as well as, you know, orally aware of what's happening here. So thank you. Representative Lucero.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And we have not served on a committee since 2015, 2016, and then it was Education Policy Committee. So I appreciate the opportunity to serve on this committee. For those who may not know, I am Eric Lucero, and I serve the great cities of Albertville, St. Michael, Otsego, Hanover, and the Wright County portion of Dayton. This is my third term, and I have been on the Public Safety Committee each of the terms that I've been having the privilege of serving in the House here. So this is a great committee. It is like civil law when we're, for the most part, it's not a real partisan committee. There obviously will be some controversial issues, but the topics that are under the scope of this committee are one that are agreeable by both sides. So I look forward to the next 2 years.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is John Poston, and I represent District 9A, which is Southern Cass County, Todd and Wadena County, up in north central Minnesota. I'm like you. I have not been on this committee, and this is going to be a steep learning curve for me. It's one that my constituents care deeply about, and so do I, and I'm looking forward to participating. But I'm going to be on that steep learning curve right along with you. But looking forward to it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Shelley Christensen. I'm from the Stillwater area, Stillwater, Lake Elmo, all the small communities along the St. Croix River. I'm a retired teacher. I taught high school English for many years. I still coach track and cross country. I have two big prisons, in case you didn't know, in Stillwater. So I'm also on the subcommittee, the corrections subcommittee. So I have interest in that area. In programming, being an educator, obviously, I think there's room for, you know, if we have enough guards, if we have enough security and safety officers, I think we can increase programming and improve programming at the prisons. I think improving safety should also consider improving the safety of the offenders in the prison. I think sometimes that is lost in the conversation. We lost two guards this year, and it was sad in my community, very sad. But for every one of those assaults, there are many more assaults amongst the population also. So I think we have to consider that also. I, too, am learning, however. So I look forward to working with all of you. I ran on the fact that I would be bipartisan, or that I would be nonpartisan, that I would reach across the aisle and work with others. So I'm practicing by sitting over with these great guys, and it's been fun to get to know them. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize for being tardy. I had caught up with the County Attorneys Association representative to confirm their neutrality on some legislation, so that's been confirmed. Anyway, they'll be getting in touch. I've been serving public safety in my district, which is District 2A, north central Minnesota, from the northwest angle to Akeley since 2002. Yeah, first in a law enforcement capacity and working in violent crime, narcotics trafficking, patrol, yeah, you name it. We were working on it and trying to take care of the people back home. So when injuries from a meth lab inhalation exposure ended my career in law enforcement, the good Lord opened this door to the legislation where I could continue in public safety and continue in public service. So I look forward to trying to make, I've been trying to make this a better place for everybody, a safer place for everybody, and I look forward to working with everybody on this committee. Some of them I have in the first, my first term, my second term. Some of them are back. We got some new faces, you know, but I'm really looking forward to getting some good work done on behalf of the people of Minnesota.
Representative Russell, I recall when we first met, it was either last year or the year before, it was during one of those get-togethers that Representative Ward, I think, had helped arrange for. And you shared a little bit, I wonder if you could say just a few quick words of work that you do with Central America, if I remember right. Am I?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
My kids and I, we do mission work abroad. We go through our church, and we work in children's homes to work with the kids that they don't have parents, and build classrooms for them to spend time with them, and you know, to bring the gospel around the world wherever we go. So that is that's part of the stuff that my children and I do, and the mission work is, if I wasn't here, I'd be doing that full time.
Representative, I'll be testing your Spanish throughout the session.
I haven't gotten that far yet. So it would be a failing test.
So I'm Representative Marion O'Neill. My district is 29B, which is Buffalo, Monticello, and Maple Lake. I'm starting my fourth term, and I've been on the Public Safety Committee since I was first elected. I've been on the Civil Law Committee for two of the bienniums of that as well. So I also am on all three of the committees this time around, so Public Safety, Judiciary with Representative Lesh, and Corrections with Representative Considine. So I guess I'm the one that's the steady Eddie through the whole, all three. My background is I have a bachelor's degree from Bemidji State University in Applied Psychology with a minor in chemical dependency. I have a master's degree from a private school on the East Coast in counseling. I worked at Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge. Yeah, they changed their name. It used to be something else. For a good while. And I also worked at an international humanitarian relief and Christian missions organization where I also did humanitarian relief and church planting and missions work all over the world. So I've traveled on every continent except Australia, which I still am going to get to. Haven't gotten there yet. Well, we had worked there too. I was going to get there, but the trip got canceled. And Antarctica. So I don't know who wants to go to Antarctica, but it's almost like that in Minnesota this week. Okay. We have a couple that will go to Antarctica.
Australia.
I think our committee budget might be stretched.
I hear it's lovely certain times of the year. I did jail volunteer work for 12 years, and so not only did I work at Teen Challenge, but I also was a preacher, the Sunday morning preacher at jail, and every time I would get done, and I would preach for an hour straight, and yes, it was a captive audience, but they could always make a disturbance and make it stop. They never wanted it to stop, and they always came and said, when are we doing this again? When are you coming back again? And they absolutely loved it, so as did I. The work that I've done here is I've done a lot of work with MnCASA, which is the Minnesota Coalition Against Sexual Assault, and also the Coalition for Battered Women. I've done a lot of their work as well. So I've kind of done a lot in the sexual assault statutes and domestic violence statutes, HROs, and things like that. I also did a lot of work with treatment courts, which is really my that is my love, too. I spent so much time visiting the treatment courts. I went to Hennepin County Treatment Courts seven different times to see all seven of their treatment courts. I went to Ramsey County at least two or three times, and then out to the district courts a few times to see how they did it there. I helped Wright County launch their drug court, and I'm on their kind of advisory board, and I have gone to two of their three graduations. Going to be going to another one very soon, and I'm very proud of those people. They have done the impossible because they didn't think that it was possible for them to change our lives. And yet all of those folks around the table, and from the prosecutors to defense lawyers to jobs placement and housing placement people, everybody saw something in them that they didn't even see themselves, and it's really a miraculous thing. I'd like to see more of that if we could really get behind the treatment courts. They are incredibly effective, very comprehensive. In fact, they're very much like when I worked in psychiatric hospitals, strangely enough, where you would have the treatment team sit around and talk about each individual patient. It's very similar. It's just amazing. So that's just a little bit about me. I'm incredibly passionate. I work across the aisle every chance I get. And I did that in the majority as much as I did in the minority, probably more in the majority. There is some great talent in this room, and I really look forward to working with them.
Well, good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I think I did find a picture of the last time you wore a tie. It's on the House webpage. And I appreciate serving on this committee. I come to this for several different reasons. I am, and this should be of no shock to those of you that I've served with, I'm a strong proponent of the Second Amendment, and that is an issue that we're going to be dealing with. And we're going to have a passionate conversation. I know we will. And when I have brought bills before this committee regarding that topic, it has been a passionate topic. We can disagree without being disagreeable, and I would encourage all of us to encourage the people who will come and speak on our behalf to also do the same. Representative Pinto, you remember when I brought bills forward last year. After that bill hearing, I stepped outside, and somebody who was on the other side of the issue asked if they could get a moment of my time, and I said, sure. And they said, if you'll remember the testimony in committee, there was a person that said that you'll never understand what happened until you go through this yourself as a family. The person who stopped me afterwards came up and said very bold-faced to me, Representative Nash, I hope that you're shot and killed in front of your family. Unacceptable. My wife and I have a standing understanding that if she calls and asks what happens down here, I tell her. I told her that, and that was a bad move. We are not here to threaten one another. We are here to exchange ideas and possibly change law. We are not here to threaten one another. And I would encourage all of us to check that at the door and to encourage the people who come down here that may feel the same as we do to never do that, because that is unacceptable. 2 years forward, obviously, it still impacts me. Not something that we should advocate for. The other parts that I am looking forward to being on this committee for is that I am a strong advocate for criminal justice for people who are abusers. I myself was an abused child, heavily. My father hospitalized me many times, and I want to see justice brought for kids like me. And Mr. Chair, you remember that you and I sat across the table from one another on your legislature. And I don't know that we agreed on anything. Pretty sure we didn't agree on anything, except that the day ended in Y. But we had a fine time. I enjoyed it thoroughly. I enjoy the relationship I have with Representative Lesh. Representative Pinto, you and I have talked a number of times. Representative Dean, you and I sat in your office yesterday, and we agreed that we were going to be disagreeing. No mysteries on those things. But here's the thing that I want to bring to this committee. And I speak passionately. You've all caught my act on the floor and in committee. That's okay to speak passionately and speak directly and speak strongly on your beliefs. I don't ever want to make it personal. And if you feel that I've made it personal, stop me. Just know that it's not. I'm speaking passionately regarding my personal paradigm and the paradigm of the people that I represent. But we should never, ever dissolve our resolve to let personalities get involved in this and to allow some of the things that have happened in the last couple of years that I've mentioned earlier ever happen again. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. You know, I think the ratings on this show probably went through the roof after you and I were on, so We were stars that evening.
Well, Mr. Chair, if you remember, I think the ratings went up because there were no senators that night.
Correct.
Well played.
That's correct, yeah. Well, and let me just say that it's a good reminder about committee decorum and respect and integrity. You know, my belief is that laws in this institution are only as viable as the people have respect for them. And the people's respect springs from how we respect this institution, how we respect the law, how we respect engaging with one another as full human beings. And that, I have to say, I have rarely found that to be an issue among our members, quite honestly. More often than not, that rises with some folks who come here with a different, for the public who may come here with a different perspective, you know, certain anger and anxieties, whatever. We tend to tolerate and absorb a lot of that, but at the same time, it is important that we expect of all participants in this process to always respect this institution, whether they're a member or not. So it's a very good reminder. I really appreciate it. And the other thing I'll say very quickly is the floor of the House is a very unique creature. The floor of the House, quite frankly, often than not, for better or for worse, is not where laws are made. It's where laws are passed formally. Laws are made right here around these tables. Small groups of us, you know, digging in deep, rolling up our sleeves, pushing each other, challenging each other, absolutely. And in the end, working through some very difficult work. I really honor and respect the work of committees. I suspect you all do as well. I certainly would call on the public to approach that, to approach our work here in the committee with that mindset. It's a real privilege to be a member of a Minnesota House committee wrestling with and shaping law. Representative Edelson, I'm going to jump over to our vice chair.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. My name is Heather Edelson. I'm the new representative for Edina, Minnesota. So Edina is where I represent, and I come from a place that's very different. I grew up in North Minneapolis and Northeast, and so my perspectives in terms of looking at how crime takes place are quite different, because in Edina we have a very low crime rate. In fact, I think we're known for having the highest DWI that we capture on Highway 100. I think we had an officer that got that award. I serve on the Crime Prevention Fund. My background's as a mental health therapist, so Representative, you and I will be able to agree on mental health actually is a big issue in terms of our officers are facing. The number of calls in Edina that have increased specifically to mental health, they're big. Our community is, I think, looking at this committee, it was one of my number one committees. I'm very glad you're chair. One of the things is, as a mom, I'm concerned. I think this is a really big committee, and we have a large responsibility as we look at what's going to happen over the next 10 years and the laws that we create. There's intersectionality in looking at how we deal with schools, how we deal with mental health, how we look at the juvenile justice system, which I know under Senator Chair Lesch, that will be under your committee. These are big opportunities for us to really help people. So I look forward to participating. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. I'll call on my dear friend and colleague, Chairman John Lesch.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate the comments that are made by a lot of people here today, including Representative Nash. That story, I hope we all remember that we kind of need to have each other's backs on some of this stuff in terms of maintaining decorum and respect for the institution and the law, because really without that there's no point in us being here in the first place, and not just with respect to highly passionate, even inappropriately so, constituents or testifiers like Representative Nash experienced, but including with other government agencies. So we sometimes get sideways with them. I got a call a couple years ago, and I got chewed out by the governor's chief of staff because the MnDOT commissioner was withholding information from Republican MnDOT or transportation chairs that in a way that I thought was inappropriate. I said, if you want another vote to call for subpoenas from the commissioner, I will be that vote. I got an angry call from the governor's chief of staff asking why I was beating up on the governor, et cetera, et cetera. I'm like, whatever, that's fine. You know, I haven't chewed out before, okay, as you can probably imagine. But I hope we all can remember that at a certain point we respect the same laws and institutions that we're here to serve. So with that, this committee will be doing the work that has some tough questions before it about the direction we're going. And some folks around this table are passionate about various issues, including gun issues, Second Amendment issues, and we're going to have to grapple with that, and I hope we grapple with it in a respectful way. Some of us are passionate about the police. I've been criticized for being too tough on police. I also believe that the police should be well-funded to do their job and well-trained, including the fashion police, which I think are based in Edina, aren't they, Representative Adelson? we got 2 years, so
I mean, used to it.
but I look forward to. Oh, and the last thing I will say is that you know, Chair Mariani and I have jurisdictional areas that could potentially overlap, but we are going to work hard not to duplicate bill hearings, because that ends up taking up a lot of our time. And I want us to, sometimes it's inevitable. There's the high-profile reform issue that that Chair Mariani's going to handle, and it also has data practices, which they're going to come to judiciary or something like that. Sometimes it's unavoidable, but to the extent we can avoid it, I hope we will do that so as to make sure that that you all, the time of everyone here is respected. That's it. Thank you, Chair Mariani.
Thank you. So, Pencil.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm starting my third term in the House, my second term in this committee, and I actually was it was a real regret my first term to not be on the committee that first term, because I really enjoyed the opportunity last term and a great chance to work with Representative O'Neill on a bunch of gender violence issues and Representative Grossel. Sounds like we're going to be continuing a lot of discussions with Representative Grossel along the way, and Representative Lucero, et cetera, and then certainly Chair Johnson, and then the new members of this committee as well. And I'm looking forward to the chance to work together. I serve outside the legislature as a prosecutor, and so bring that lens to this work. I started off focusing on domestic violence cases where kids are present, and so had that a particular focus for a number of years, in fact, handling misdemeanors all the way on up, and then was doing work against sex trafficking as a prosecutor, and then doing training statewide and protocol developments. I think I have the distinction of, I've trained a couple thousand officers all around the state on that issue and have some particular thoughts. And I know as we're discussing training and had discussions with the post board and those angles, trying to work that out. For the last couple years, I've been serving in the charging unit in the county attorney's office where I work. And so I've had a much broader exposure to a wide variety of offenses. And the impacts understanding, so I hope to be bringing that to the work of that background in all those different areas. It seems like we have some really extraordinary opportunities to move forward under your leadership, Mr. Chair, to recognize that the disparities that we see in all kinds of other aspects of our work really do come to a head in the criminal justice system. You know, as a prosecutor, I see in the courtroom, there's the bar. You know, passing the bar means you're up by the judge. And in the courtrooms that I'm in, very often there's a massive racial difference in that courtroom. On one side of the bar, the attorneys and often the judge, though less so now, are white, and often the people on the other side are people of color, and recognizing those impacts all the way along. I'm chairing a committee in early childhood as a real priority this session, there are adverse childhood experiences, things that happen to kids that end up having lifelong impact. And one of those adverse childhood experiences, to your comment, Mr. Chair, is having a parent who's incarcerated. That as you were referencing, Representative Johnson, Chair Johnson, that, you know, that's the impact. The parent has an action and they go to prison, but recognizing the impact, the lifelong impact that can occur when there are those experiences when kids are young. So I'm trying to bring that focus of the beginning of life, and then when things can go really off the rails, that's where we are in this committee. And I want to close by circling back to Representative Nash's description of what happened to you, Representative Nash. I had not heard that before, and of course I found that just appalling. And I agree with Representative Lesh that we need to have one another's backs and recognize that, like, that in your work, Representative Nash, in that hearing, that is honorable work. You are standing up for important principles, and you are bringing your best self to bear. And to have Minnesotans to recognize that each one of us is bringing our best selves to our work, and standing up for principles that are important, and trying to work together to move forward in a way that is going to keep Minnesotans safe, that is going to uphold their rights, is going to do that work. I hope that we can keep that spirit in mind throughout the work. I hope that we can encourage those who are allies of ours and those who are working on the other side to recognize that we are all Minnesotans, and it's such important work that we're doing together. I have felt that in this committee in general, and even when things do get heated on certain issues, I certainly hope that we can keep that in mind, and I can certainly commit that I'm going to do that in every way that I possibly can, and I really appreciate you sharing that account, and I hope that we can continue to move forward in that way together. So thank you, and thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and committee members. It's exciting to be back on public safety. I've been serving the past two terms, so this will be my third term on this committee. So I think I have just like one step in front of you, Representative Pinto. And I bring, I think, in many ways a unique perspective to this committee as being someone who was a captive audience for several months in my youth. When I was a young man, that I've seen the criminal justice system from the perspective that I kind of like it jokingly say I was a consumer, but the reality is we do have individuals that go through the system, and I hope that we can help move a system forward that the most important thing that we start planning when someone gets locked up in a facility is actually how they have a successful exit, because ultimately that's where public safety begins for those who have been locked up and convicted of crimes. And I'm really excited the connection that we're making with you, Representative Pinto, relative to children, because I think the best way to approach public safety is to make sure that crimes don't occur. And the way we do that is to actually have children grow up in environments where they have the opportunity to be their most successful selves, and that the likelihood of them making bad choices and bad decisions is minimized. So I'm excited about that. You know, we're going to have a lot of issues, fortunately, and I've seen it the past few years, that we're going to agree on, and I think that's great. And some of those issues we're going to disagree on the details on how to get there. And I think that those are those opportunities that I hope we have a healthy dialogue and healthy debate. And then we also know there are going to be some issues that we just don't agree upon. And I think in the end, I think that if cooler heads can prevail, we'll present our perspectives passionately with some merit, and ultimately the committee will make the decisions important. My hope is actually what Chair Johnson said, that Minnesota has been an example to many other states when it comes to issues of criminal justice. And I hope that we can continue to be that example for other states on how to move the safety of Minnesotans forward through the legislation that hopefully will pass here. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So my name is Kelly Moeller, and I represent Shoreview, Moundsview, Arden Hills, and a little bit of Spring Lake Park. And when I'm newly elected, and when I'm not here, I'm a prosecutor. I've been a prosecutor and victim rights advocate for about 20 years now. So I started my career at the Attorney General's office handling felony level appeals for Greater Minnesota. So if you tell me the city you're from and I ask you the county, it's because I know most of your locations by your county with my work at the AG's office. And I was an executive director of the Minnesota Alliance on Crime, which is the General Crime Victim Coalition, for a couple of years, and have worked closely over the years with MnCASA and CBW Standpoint, some of the other organizations that are focused on victims. And currently I handle appeals, felony level appeals, at the Hennepin County Attorney's Office. And I really went to law school because friends in college told me they were survivors of sexual assault. I wanted to seek justice for other survivors, and that's really where my passion lies. Although I've been handling all kinds of felony levels appeals over the years, I'm really passionate about sexual assault issues. I've already reached out to Representative O'Neill, and I'm very excited about the possibility of us partnering on some good legislation this year. I really think it's important when we're talking about those issues especially that we center victim and survivor voices in the conversation. So I'm looking forward to working on those issues. And like Representative Pinto said, I also see the disparities in our criminal justice system. And I would say that one thing that's been really eye-opening to me over the years is reading the pre-sentence investigations that are done on defendants, because they give a lot of background information on a defendant's life. And you look at all of the different things that have happened to many of our defendants over the years, and you know, it makes you wonder where systems have failed or where we can step in and do things differently earlier on. So anyway, I'm really excited to be here and looking forward to working with you all. Thanks.
Jamie Long, I represent District 61B, which is southwest Minneapolis. I'm the new Paul Thiessen. And I have, I'm a lawyer by background and spent some time practicing criminal law, though not to the extent of some of my colleagues, but worked in a public defender's office for a time and did some pro bono criminal justice and criminal law work as well. But I spent most of my career in policy, and I worked as a law fellow in the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee and the U.S. House Judiciary Committee. So have some exposure to doing policy work at that level. And so public safety, criminal justice are passions of mine. But one of the main reasons I requested this committee is because I think that with Minnesota being the only state in the nation right now that has a divided legislature, I think that this is one topic that where there's been proven bipartisanship in the past. I think the federal government and the president coming together on one of their only meaningful pieces of legislation being the First Step Act last Congress, I think, is a good model. But we know that most public safety policy is set at the state level. The federal criminal population is only a small percent of the total population of folks who are incarcerated or under control of our criminal justice system. So I think that the rubber really meets the road here at the state level, and I'm looking forward to seeing what we can get done on a bipartisan basis in this committee.
Terrific. Thank you. And Chair Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, before I start, Mike Pinsky, are you here? It's a constituent from Mankato that he did. Sugar. I have been trying to catch up with him all day. And I heard he was going to be here. Let's see, my background. I worked in locked institutions for 28 years as a behavior analyst, writing behavioral treatment plans for mentally ill and dangerous, then as a counselor and program director in the Blue Earth County Jail. As Chair Mariani mentioned, I have a subcommittee on corrections. We are going to look first at the safety and security of the institutions. As Representative Christensen said, this is not only for the staff but also for the people that reside there. I think somebody down there mentioned that we are a leader in corrections. I would say that 25 years ago we were more of a leader, and I would like to get back to that. Ultimately, I hope that our committee ends up moving forward so that we have less people incarcerated. I would like to look at a number of diversion programs, whether it is Veterans Court, whether it is Drug Court. Blue Earth County has a Before the Yellow Line where they have a social worker that sits in the booking room to divert people that are mentally ill. They don't belong in jail. Jails are not equipped to handle them. We need to look at a pathway of hope for our inmates when they are leaving. Once the safety and security of the institution has been taken care of, our CA has suggested a program called Getting Home Safely. That's not only for the custody staff, but it is also for the people leaving the prison, that they would get home not only safely, but prepared and hopeful to become taxpaying good citizens. We have a talent pool there. I've now said this half a dozen times in the last couple of days. I lost track of the number of times that I looked at inmates at the Blue Earth County Jail. And I'm sorry, Representative Dean, you're right. What's the word I should be using instead?
Well, I think they're residents of facilities.
Residents of facilities. Again, we need to change the mindset just a little bit. Look at the residents of the facility that I worked in and said, if you put half as much work into a legitimate endeavor as you have in putting in getting here, you'd be CEO of a company. We have a talent pool, some very bright, intelligent people that are there that just don't know the pathway to success. We need to help them get there. I believe they are a resource for the state and the nation. What else am I missing, Jamal? I really like our new CA. He has tried to keep me focused and on what we're going to do. But, again, looking at three things. First, the safety and security of the institution, meaningful training and opportunities for the folks inside once, so that when they go out they have a path for hope, and looking at tapping into a talent pool for the community that we can help build on. I think I'll just end there. I'm repeating myself, I know, because I've actually made this speech a couple of times in the last few days. So thank you, Representative Mariano.
Thank you, Chair Considine. I challenge the Senate to match up the talent on their committee that we have on this committee. Incredible passion and talent here today. I'm really looking forward to the work we're going to do together. I'm going to ask our staff to quickly introduce themselves, and then we're going to move on to our conversation. Our first conversation won't be the only conversation with the Peace Officer Training and Standards Board, but I will start with my our committee administrator. If you all can just tell us quickly who you are, what you do, and how you got here.
My name is Jamal Lundy. I'm the committee administrator for this committee. Got here through a long road, but part of that is my first session working, I mean, it's a little campaign work, but my first session working here was 13-14 session. I worked with Representative Mariani as a CLA, and I'm really happy to be back now as the ACA. Along the road, fortunately went to law school, so I got a semester left in that, so I'll definitely be looking for some lawyer joke. Representative Considine is definitely peppered me with some already.
Thank you, Jason.
Hello, everyone. A pleasure being here. My name is Jason Chavez. I just graduated in May from the College of St. Scholastica, where I served as a student body president there. And then right after that, I started working for Councilmember Schrader, which is Ward 11 in the city of Minneapolis, and then started working for Chair Mariani this October. So I'm excited to get some work done.
Terrific. And our House nonpartisan staff, we'll start over here to my left.
Mr. Chair, members, Ben Johnson from House Research.
And Mr. Johnson, how long have you been with the institution?
This will be my third session.
Terrific. All right.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Jeff Diebel. I also work in House Research, and I've been affiliated with iterations of this committee since I started at the House in 2002.
Terrific. We'll be leading on both of you pretty heavily, no doubt. And then our partisan staff from our two caucuses.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. I moved so I wouldn't have my back to anybody when I spoke. My name is John Hultquist. I'm the House GOP caucus researcher. I have, like you, started working for the state in January 1991, so 28 years. I have a passion for public safety issues. I've been in all three branches, and when I was in the judicial branch, I worked with the treatment courts, and would, as Representative O'Neill has toured them, I would encourage any member and staff who is not take a ride along in a treatment court. It's remarkable work. I was public safety committee administrator in 2011 and 12, and then researcher in 13 and 14, and can testify that we did a lot of good bipartisan work in those 4 years, and looking forward to it now. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
John, it's been my good fortune to interact with you a number of times over those years. It's good to be able to work with you again. So, and
thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Robert Heider with DFL Caucus Research. Like Representative O'Neill, I'm on this committee, Judiciary and the Corrections Subcommittee. I come here through various political campaigns, state and federal government work, and as a proud graduate of the University of North Dakota School of Law.
Welcome to the Minnesota House. Looking forward to working with you, Robert. And then we have one page or two page? Two. Let's hear from them. Welcome. And, you know, we depend on our pages more than we think, so we're thanking you ahead of time for all we're going to put you through, but looking forward to working with you as well. Members, there will be committee rules. We'll be releasing those shortly. I've basically kind of been scanning to see what my other colleagues have been doing, and I think we're going to share them with Chair Johnson ahead of time just to get his insight as well, but look for those within the week to come. And so with that, members, I'm going to ask Nathan, is it Gove or Gov?
Gove.
Gove.
Yep.
Yeah, I was leading that way. I'm going to ask Nathan Gove, who is the executive director of the Minnesota Peace Officer Training and Standards Board, commonly referred to as the Post Board, to come and have a conversation with us. And it looks like we'll be able to get in a good 30-minute or so conversation. So this is an opportunity to learn a little bit about the Post Board. Do not fear, we will have Mr. Gove back to have ongoing conversations as well. But this is just sort of as a way for us to warm up, but also to learn about the important work of the Minnesota Post Board. So Mr. Gove, welcome. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Nate Gove. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Peace Officer Standards and Training, commonly referred to as the Post Board. I'm in my fourth year in this position. Prior to that, I am a product of Minnesota's peace officer licensing system. I was a licensed officer in our state for just under 29 years. In fact, Representative Zerwas's father was a police chief in Elk River and hired me in my first job when I was 22 years old in 1985. So I think Nick was about 4 years old. I'll try to keep it moving along quickly. I do have a lot of information, and, you know, I am very mindful of members' time. The Post Board has been around. I can just get this to wake up here now. Of course. Well, for some reason, it doesn't want to advance.
Well, we'll get you some technical help.
Sure.
Here. Just wondering.
I bet you I can just restart it. There we go. Just briefly, the board was founded with 1977 legislation, and our first meeting was in October of 1978. There is a number of statutes in Chapter 626, which gave us our powers and duties and sort of our authority to promulgate rules surrounding the country's first occupational licensing system for law enforcement. As such, we promulgated a significant chapter of administrative rules which guide our work. And really, our mission is to advance Minnesota's professionalism of our peace officers through education, selection, licensing, and training standards by setting those standards. Why the change? Minnesota prior to that had limited state involvement prior to the Post Board in what they required peace officers, law enforcement officers to have in our state. And eventually there was a move to really try to make it a profession with a requirement for education, for licensure, in-service education, and relicensure to mirror other professions such as teaching, nursing, and others. This resulted in a partnership with higher education in Minnesota, the colleges and universities, where now as a minimum standard, there are exceptions for military veterans as well as officers in other states with training and experience, but generally people who start in Minnesota have at a minimum a two-year degree. Many have four-year degrees and advanced degrees as well. And the board, over the years, it's expanded from the original five to six colleges and universities to regionally throughout our state at 30 colleges and universities that the board certifies to provide what's referred to as the PPOE, the Professional Peace Officer Education Program, which gets somebody license eligible. And by passing our licensing exam, when they get hired by a law enforcement agency, that activates their license with full law enforcement officer duties. Minnesota really set that standard. And I'll admit, I've been asked numerous times, well, if it's so great, why have another states adopted it? Well, no other state has adopted it identically, but just about all the states in our country have post commissions that certify peace officers, that set training standards and retraining standards and set conduct standards and write administrative rules and statutes. And clearly, there are no states that I'm aware of that are back still in the 50s. Here's your badge, here's your gun, ride with this officer for a week or two or a day or two and you're good to go. And that's how it used to be in Minnesota. Training was voluntary. So I think we've come a long way and we continue to evolve. I think there's a lot of people that don't know a lot about the Post Board. But we're in the focus of a lot of people, and our responsibility and our impact on making sure that the public is well served by professional, competent peace officers. And we have a variety of services that we provide. Our stakeholder list is very long, from the legislature to the citizens, governor's office, and certainly 12,000 licensed peace officers that hold a license, the associations, the Chiefs Association, the sheriffs, the MPPOA, and other special interest groups, and certainly the media. That's been a big eye-opener. The days of who's the Post Board in terms of from the media, I think since the day I took over, it's certainly been at the forefront in many instances. Just a quick snapshot as of 2 days ago, this is how many licensed, working, active officers there are in Minnesota at 431 agencies. Another 1,200 maintain a license but aren't currently working. Number of officers retire, they maintain a license and you know, look to get back in a part-time capacity. And then there's currently 109 part-time licensed officers. And that was the lower standard and requirements to be part-time licensed. The legislature passed a statute in June of 2014 that really sunsetted that, in a sense that if someone is no longer working, they retire, their license is canceled. So it's slowly diminishing. We have a lot of services and strategies that we are responsible for. One being administrating a licensing exam to prospective candidates in our field, both in Minnesota and from other states reciprocally. Monitor agency compliance with mandated policies from the legislature to ensure that they are being implemented. Conduct on-site compliance reviews. We have a face-to-face review with every law enforcement agency in Minnesota every 4 to 5 years. That's a tall task statewide. to ensure that they are following licensing, selection, backgrounding people that are getting licensed, ongoing training requirements from the legislature. We certainly monitor and process and handle complaints about officers' conduct that are within our jurisdiction, and we manage a significant training reimbursement fund. I do want to just talk about some board initiatives. The board totally rewrote our learning objectives by which the curriculum at those 30 colleges and universities build their coursework, both educational, academic, and practical hands-on skills. This was totally rewritten. The colleges had until late 2017 to certify to the board that they've now rebuilt their curriculum to reflect them. At the same time, we were developing an online component of the current licensing exam and developing a totally new licensing exam that's in line with our learning objectives, which are 50 pages long, four categories, and over 500 learning objectives. That's a lot of material. The days of just, you know, range time and driving a police car, I think that that is a small portion of what people receive in terms of education and training in our state. There's a big dose of not only that, or a dose of the practical skills, check, of what to do, but how to do it, when to do it, and why you're doing it. The critical decision making, which in law enforcement seems to be getting only more complex in more compressed time, with higher and higher downsides for officers, the communities, the public. I'm proud to say that in October of this past year, 2018, we released our new exam. It's fully online, subcontracted through Pearson View. People in other states, primarily the Midwest, that want to come work in Minnesota can take that test online. It's also offered throughout the country at Pearson View testing sites, and military bases that have a Pearson View testing site or subcontractor as well. So we think that's an excellent strategy to for efficiency, leveraging technology for the people we serve. Pathways to Policing. This is a program that $400,000 was appropriated in fiscal year 19. To the Office of Justice Programs to help agencies defray the costs of people that they hire in a non-law enforcement capacity and get them license eligible. They have a 2- or 4-year degree. It's a 22-week program that ends in their licensing and activation for that particular department as a peace officer. The money, $400,000, will help defray the cost, up to 50% of those costs, for about 25 to 26 people. Currently, Hennepin Tech is running a program of a number of suburbs, and there's 14 people in that program. The police training bill that the Pulse Board, along with other interested parties, the associations, other law enforcement professionals helped contribute to passage mandating 16 CE hours within an officer's 3-year licensing cycle in three important areas: mental health, crisis response, which that is true, that is a highly frequent call that law enforcement officers are called to with in a real crisis mode. And we want officers to be as best prepared as they can so that people don't end up within the criminal justice system. That's not the proper spot for them. It's really a medical emergency. But there are other factors that typically are at play from a public safety standpoint, especially when 911 is dialed and now law enforcement responds. Conflict management and mediation, another area of de-escalation strategies, and cultural diversity, valuing community differences to include awareness, training on implicit bias. The board built learning objectives on those quite promptly after that bill was passed, and they have been put out, and July 1st of 2018 is when officers there, as they start a new licensing cycle, must get this training within there before they renew their license in 3 years. Along with that came a significant investment from the state to the Post Board. I'll touch on that briefly, and I just sort of talk about what our current budget is, but it was $6 million per year on top of the $2.8 million as part of the special revenue account that goes to the Post Board for peace officer training reimbursement for the costs, not only to help with this mandated training, but there's annual use of force, emergency vehicle operations, and a host of other trainings that local communities deem important for their officers, many hats for law enforcement officers to wear. Rulemaking. While the board does not have a rulemaker,
I'm sorry, Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, question I have is, and it concerns me a little bit, we're mandating so many of the different things, of the 48 continuing education hours, counting the 16 and the other things, of the 48 hours and the 48 credits required, how many are mandated and how many are unmandated, given the officer's choice to pursue a career in an area that they're interested in and that they can key on and help their community?
Mr. Goff.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, depending on when you would take your emergency vehicle pursuit driving behind the wheel training, which is at least 8 hours, that's now mandated every 5 years, started out as three. You could have up to 32 hours of your 48 that are currently mandated by the state, assuming you work for an agency that requires at least 8 hours of in-service use of force to cover everything from arrest, officer safety tactics, to firearms training, all of the equipment that officers are issued. As you know, that's a highly litigious area for municipalities to ensure that they are giving quality training that leads to good outcomes.
Representative Johnson.
I'm concerned with all the mandated training that we have. Is the training good? Absolutely. But with 32 hours of mandated training, one two-day course, they have their 48 hours. They're not getting, and it's expensive. The training is expensive. But the officers might not be getting the type of training that is important to them and important to their community because we're getting so many mandated trainings in that three-year time period.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Johnson, I mean, I think that's the challenge for the Post Board. We paint as we implement the mandates, as we try to understand legislative priorities, profession priorities. We paint with really a very broad brush, from, as I like to say, from Aiken to Zumbrota, literally with Minneapolis, St. Paul, and other large agencies in between to allow enough flexibility for the 431 executives, 87 being elected sheriffs, to determine what needs their particular communities, not only in the metro but in greater Minnesota and Halleck, what they need, what their communities are demanding. So I am very mindful of that, sir.
And Mr. Gall, these are requirements that are expected to be fulfilled in what period of time? Is it the three-year cycle licensing?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we purposely wrote the law with anytime we mandate something, we know who the customers immediately will be. 11,000 officers. It's making sure we have the providers that can provide that training and education in a reasonable manner. So as officers, and the board needed time to publish the and develop the learning objectives with a wide variety of experts and stakeholders. So as officers renew their license beginning July 1st of 2018, their three-year cycles begin. I can tell you that mental health, crisis response, and the challenges that law enforcement is feeling in dealing with that appropriately on behalf of their communities, chiefs and sheriffs have been doing this training well before this law was passed and putting significant resources into that. So I know that that is primarily where much of the infusion of additional funds are from the legislature in reimbursements on what that's paying for.
Representative Dean has a question.
Actually, Mr. Chair, no longer have a question. You asked my question.
Very well. Mr. Gold, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll keep on it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Gove, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to note, Mr. Gove, I'd love to get information. I said maybe other committee members would as well. Just more about the content of the trainings and just more detail. Not for you to necessarily go into it now, but I'm interested in kind of how that legislative mandate has been kind of actualized, how it's actually working on the ground. And so if you can just send information to us subsequent to this. I mean, you share more if you want to now, but if there's anything more you can give us in terms of materials, that kind of thing, I'd love to see kind of how that's working. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Pinto, I can certainly do that. What I can tell you is there's a long list of providers from NAMI to other organizations, the Minnesota Crisis Intervention Team Association, and they've looked at these learning objectives, which I think are very much best practices, and put that into curriculum, which we post-approve. So there's a lot of, there's not really one organization that's able to provide the training to that number of officers. We have quite a list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I guess, because I know that my understanding is that for training, typically the post board is pretty loose in terms of the, you kind of set real broad guidelines, but then providers can sort of develop the training they want within. Is that same sort of oversight in terms of this training, or is the oversight, you know, somewhat tighter and more prescribed in terms of saying we want, are you reviewing kind of individual, the content of individual training curricula and those providers, or is it kind of a little more backed off as it is in some other training areas?
Mr. Gold.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pinto, it's sort of a combination. The board operates within our rules, which I think puts us sort of in the middle regarding the level of regulatory oversight the board exerts over training. We certainly have rules to make sure that the learning objectives are being met, that there's a certain a minimum amount per hour of educational activities, but we do keep it pretty broad in terms of we are not the training providers ourselves. Many of these courses produced by NAMI, Minnesota CIT, the 40-hour course, those are pretty well-vetted courses that certainly we look at to make sure they meet board rules. And a number of the organizations are bringing in professionals and developing their own training. And I think one of the things that's important about our system is we allow enough flexibility so that we realize, sort of with our college and university system, there's more than one college with one instructor where you can go get a degree in a variety of professions. So we try to recognize that there are a lot of different voices on that, but that they do need to meet what the agreed upon learning objectives are.
Mr. Church, one final. I guess maybe for the benefit of the committee members then, it's the check on quality, a lot of it, in my understanding, is the law enforcement leadership, an individual chief or sheriff choosing to have a course, but otherwise you all, it's a little more let a thousand flowers bloom. You're going to make sure that, that they actually are flowers, that they're, et cetera. But otherwise it's going to be up to the individual agency to decide, I want that for my officers, I want that for my deputies, rather than having, I think sometimes there's a misconception that post board is essentially controlling training in the state, and it's kind of looser than that.
Director Gove.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pinnell, that's correct, that we think sheriffs and chiefs are responsible for their department and their training divisions and their training officers are in a good position, especially the feedback from the officers. Now, we would certainly respond if there were complaints that, well, this is not even appropriate, but our rules are the skills, knowledge, and abilities to be a law enforcement officer in our state. The training must be an educational need and reasonable as well. So that is true. It is more of an individual agency under our current structure, staffing, and authority.
Thank you. Members, we have about 5 minutes left. We have three members that have questions. And I know we haven't gone through all the things that we wanted to cover. And so my apologies to you, Director Gove. But as I mentioned earlier, this is just one first conversation. So I'm wondering, members, I know Representative Adelson, Lash, and Long have questions, but as our guest, I'm wondering if there's one thing you want to jump to right away to share, or do you want to entertain these three questions as quickly as possible? Thank you. I just want to make sure that right now we're able to set information out that should at least early on be.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I could certainly zip through a few slides.
Why don't we do that?
And yes, there is one thing, and that is our...
Thank you, members, for deferring.
Rulemaking, that's been up on the board. We continue to move forward on that. We do not have a rulemaker on staff, but I've designated one, and we are working on it together, something that's quite complicated. I've talked about agency statistics, what our current staffing is. It's significantly down from 2001. What our positions are in a variety of areas, from my position to our various coordinators. I want people just to see of our board, 15 members, 14 appointed by the governor, one ex officio. It is heavily law enforcement and PPOE represented, not unlike other professions. This is the piece I wanted to get to, because for our ability, and I've heard talk about support, and I get it, we're a small fish in a big pond in public safety, but we play a very important role. And we are operating on the original 39% of a surcharge on criminal traffic convictions, both criminal and traffic, and those transactions, though that revenue through that non-tax direct tax fund is continuing to decline. That surcharge is up to $75, $78 if you're in the metropolitan area, and we're operating on the original $25. 60% goes back to the general fund, and here's what you see in terms of training reimbursement. It has averaged generally in the $300 per officer, with that infusion of $6 million on top of the $2.8 for a lot of this mandated training. And other training, there has been a significant increase, as you can see. This was our reimbursement last year. About almost 9,500 officers were covered by this. State agencies under the appropriation are not. Our budget, and I think this is what I want people to see, is that, and the next slide, quite frankly, is our reimbursements. 89% goes back to local units of government to help reimburse their costs, which last year were $36 million estimated. It's not just this course. It's lodging. It's travel. It's backfilling. And I would say their estimates are probably quite low, but it's this slide. And if I could just point out, the red bars are what the increasing deficit is on what the surcharge is bringing in, from which the legislature can appropriate our entire budget, which includes the training reimbursement and our staffing. Each year it increases significantly. Now, this is based on last November's forecast, and I understand in February there'll be another forecast, but it's the green is our budget and what's currently in the base, and the blue is what the revenues are. And so it's concerning to me, because when we get to 2023, if it was not fixed, that's pretty much our entire over $1.1 million our operating budget for all of our staff to carry out the very initiatives that we're doing. So that's important. And with that, I'm at the end of my slides, Mr. Chair.
Director Gove, when we spoke recently, I had promised much more time than we allotted today.
I'm a state employee. I can come back.
Well, and so I'm setting that up. And to members, I do want to apologize. Representative Johnson, I know you have a question as well, but we have reached the end of our time. Rest assured, members and director, that this is a conversation that we will continue, including the conversation around the incredible challenge that the board has relative to its budget. So with that, members, we are...
Mr. Chair
Johnson. Please.
I'm just wondering if the staff and the members of this committee get a copy of the PowerPoint.
Yes, thank you. My goodness, yes. And in fact, we had just asked staff to make sure that that's available. And we do have the electronic copy of that, so we will be sending that out to you post-haste. And hopefully that will generate some more questions. Thank you, Mr. Johnson, for that reminder. So, members, we will meet again tomorrow, and tomorrow we'll have a conversation with the BCA and also with the new Commissioner of Public Safety. With that, Director Gold, thank you again for being with us here today. And, members, we stand adjourned.
Thank you.